Welcome to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best in public radio podcasts and storytelling. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Words, words, words. What would a radio story be without them? Or a podcast, for that matter? There are even podcasts that focus solely on language. The Illusionist, spelled with an A, is one of my favorite ones. Created and hosted by Helen Zaltzman, The Illusionist is her personal lexicological playground, where she dissects the etymology and functionality of words. Episodes have focused on the term gay pride, emojis as a language, and there's even an episode about the space between words. I've selected one of the first episodes of The Illusionist to share with you today. I'm channeling my inner Max Fisher.
Sic transit gloria. Glory fades.
To bring you an argument for Latin.
Every week since September 1989, a radio station in Finland has broadcast a news bulletin in Latin.
Nunti latini radiofonie finnike generalis quos collegerunt et latine rediderunt Reijo Pitkäranta et Satu Tuominen.
Die Mercurii, principes civitatum Ukraine, Russie, Germanie, Franco-Gallie.
Nunti latini, that's Latin for news in Latin, goes out every Friday evening just before the main news, and it is the world's only news bulletin in classical Latin. And it's now the Finnish Broadcasting Company's longest-running show. What began kind of as an experiment caught on around the world and remains very popular amongst Latin enthusiasts, particularly students and priests. Each week, Nunti Latini does cover the latest developments in the Latin language and archaeology. However, the primary focus, like a regular news bulletin, is Finnish and international news stories. So how do you talk about current affairs in a language that was last really current a couple of thousand years ago?
My name is Antti Ies. I prepare the weekly vocabularies for the broadcast.
To do that, Antti can't just rifle through the Latin dictionary. He has to come up with Latin words for concepts the Romans didn't have, from electric cars, autokinetica electrica, to cash machines, apparatus pecuniaris automaticus, and macho man. You know, like the village people song, ostentato animi masculi.
In this respect, contrary to popular belief, Latin is not that different from modern languages. For example, obviously before computers, we didn't have in Finnish any words for computers, but what we just made some up. It's the same thing for Latin, a computer. In English, is actually more or less based on Latin. The verb computo means to calculate. So computer becomes computatrum, an instrument of calculating. And, well, the same thing goes for internet. The first part of the word inter is actually a Latin prefix. So internet becomes interrete, which is basically just a literal translation. Obviously, you can't really make up words that the listeners wouldn't understand. So it's not coining words out of scratch. And very often, especially in the case of international words for modern concepts, they often are derived from Latin and Greek. So there is a multitude of words which are readily usable, just like a nuclear missile. It becomes missile nuclearis, because both elements are fundamentally Latin.
Do you have arguments over the correct pronunciation of some of the words, how the Romans would have pronounced them? Or do you figure no one can prove it, so you can just decide?
Yeah. Well, it's not that simple, obviously. as far as grammar is concerned, Nunti Latini follows the so-called classical model, and also when it comes to pronunciation. But with pronunciation, there are two different things that need to be taken into account. First is what historical linguistics can sort of figure out how the Romans actually pronounced the language. And for this, we have a lot of material. We have grammatical treatises that the Romans wrote themselves. We have commentaries by Cicero on how Latin was pronounced in his day. And we have spelling errors in inscriptions, etc., etc. So we have a lot of information based on which we can reconstruct the original pronunciation. But then, of course, there is the tradition of pronouncing Latin. So because Latin has been used continuously, every nation has developed some of their own idiosyncrasies in pronouncing Latin. But it's a very, very intriguing and mentally challenging exercise altogether.
So at least Latin is so regular, it's a bit like a machine.
Yeah, but the thing with Latin actually is that it's another of these illusions that you get because the tradition of grammar or writing grammars is actually based on teaching Latin grammar. So obviously, because all the terminology has been developed for Latin or actually, well, borrowed from Greek, then it will make it seem like Latin is so logical because all the terms, they fit exactly and all the categories and so on, they have their exact matches and so on. But this is actually just because writing grammars was originally just an endeavor of Latin teachers. And if you look at English grammars, for example, or Finnish, older Finnish grammars, they are really confusing because they are trying to impose this Latin system on these vernaculars.
Fair enough. I don't imagine the classrooms of the Roman Empire were full of children being drilled on amo, amas, amat, amamus, amartis, amant, amabam, amabas, amabat, amabamus, amabartis, amabant, amabo, amabis, amabit, amabimus, amabitis, amabunt. Fellow former Latin students, there will always be part of your brain that sounds like that, right? But even if its grammatical structure has been reverse engineered, Latin is quite reliable compared to, say, ancient Greek or Old English, with far fewer irregularities of pronunciation and spelling, certainly compared to modern English. Just take a look at words like cough and through. The last four letters are the same written down, but neither the verbs nor the consonants sound the same. You wouldn't get that kind of mess in Latin. Perhaps I'm coming round to the idea of Latin making a comeback. Maybe Latin could actually be the solution people have been looking for when they attempt to establish a universal language. Generous estimates suggest there are only around a couple of million Esperanto speakers in the world. A lot more people than that already know a smattering of Latin, or a Latin-derived language. In fact, I wonder whether Nuntii Latini exists because more people around the world are familiar with Latin than Finnish.
Well, in a way, that would be the reason for the existence of the program as such, because obviously we do have news in Finnish, but I don't think many people abroad would be interested in listening to them.
Or it'd just be difficult because Finnish looks like a hard language to master.
Yeah, but I mean that's just an illusion because people don't hear Finnish that much. But
yeah.
most people would say that Latin is pretty hard as well. But of course, Latin occupies a very different place within the European history, because as the editors often say, Latin is in a way the mother tongue of Europe, and in up to, oh, I would say, well, 18th century, it occupied, especially in university, in the academia, it occupied a place very similar to what English has today.
And in the present day, there are numerous schemes to keep Latin alive. Along with Nuntii Latini, there are Latin translations of books like Harry Potter and Winnie the Pooh. You can sign up for a free monthly Latin puzzle book, Hebdomada Enigmatum. The Pope tweets in Latin. You can choose Latin as your language option in Google and Facebook. There's a Latin version of Wikipedia with 113,450 articles at time of recording. But I still have to ask, why is Latin relevant to life today? Don't get me wrong, I'm a fan. I've always been partial to ancient languages. I started studying Latin at the age of 8 and I loved it. Yeah, alright, I was a weird child, but it came in so useful when I was learning modern Romance languages like French and Italian and Spanish. It made them a lot easier to learn. And moreover, Latin taught me so much about English itself. It's the source of 2/3 of the words in modern English. But are these things enough to justify learning something which isn't ostensibly useful in itself? Around 10 years ago, I was confronted with that question in the form of a 13-year-old boy who'd just been uprooted from his school in the USA and dropped in a traditional English public school where everyone else had been learning Latin from the womb. So he had to play catch-up, and I was hired as his Latin tutor. To be fair, he tried his best to care, but he gave off a very strong, "Why are you making me do this?" vibe. And I just couldn't give him a decent answer. Turns out I couldn't teach him Latin either, but unless he's now seeking a career in the Vatican, I'd imagine this hasn't hampered his life all that much. So, what is the point? If only Antti had been around then with the answer.
Latin has this prestige as a language that has been used in Europe since the Roman Empire, and it has been continually used all the way up to the 19th century. So this is actually part of a very long tradition, and I think keeping it alive is an aim that sort of justifies itself. So this is part of the European heritage that should never be forgotten. Part of this tradition of using Latin to communicate modern concepts, modern events, and so on. I think it gives you the feeling of belonging to something greater.
This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman. Thanks very much to Antillas and Nuntii Latini. If you're out of range of Finnish radio signals, you can listen to Nuntii Latini online. I'll link to it at theallusionist.org, and it's also available as a podcast. If you want to contact me, seek out Allusionist Show on Facebook and Twitter. Rafe has been in touch. He says, a friend today mentioned that in game shooting, snipe is considered the hardest test. I'm not a fan of game shooting, but does sniper come from a shooter of snipe? It does, Rafe. Well done. I pronounce you etymologist of the day. And listeners, I welcome your linguistic inquiries, but also I make another podcast called Answer Me This, in which for the past 8 years, I've been answering questions about words as well as a whole load of other things. So give that a go to keep you occupied in the fortnight until the next Allusionist.
You're listening to The Spot, the show that features the best stories from podcasts and independent radio producers. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Helen Zaltzman has been podcasting since around the time the term was first coined. I thought it'd be a great idea to chat with her, asking questions about her take on the recent so-called renaissance in podcasting, and of course, why she was inspired to create The Allusionist in the first place.
Well, I've always been really, really interested in language and the history of language and the myriad human choices that have happened to give us the vocabulary that we have today. And English is such a fascinating mess. It's such a large language compared to a lot. It's changed so much. Like over the last 2,000 years, like Italian is not that dissimilar to Latin. English is bearing the effect of being invaded by Vikings and Germanic forces, and then the French and the Romans before that, and all of them left their marks. You've got this big mutt of a language that is so many different things and very irregular and quite new in a lot of ways compared to those other things. And there are so many stories in it. There are hundreds of thousands of words and so many of them, there's something weird that happened. And it's exciting because sometimes there've been a few episodes where someone has written to me. So there was an episode I did about fake words in dictionaries. And that was a listener who wrote to me saying, I'm doing my PhD about this thing. I thought you might find it interesting. And I was like, wow, I do find that interesting. So I got her on the show and the episode was out within about a week of her emailing.
Hmm.
But conversely, the one about the Finnish Latin news station, I remember being played some of their output when I was learning Latin at school in the early 90s. And so I'd remembered that for years and just always thought, I wonder why that exists. And so when I got the chance to do this show, I thought, well, that's a useful calling card to just satisfy my own curiosity. So basically every episode is just me thinking, I don't know why this thing is. Is there a story there that I can find out? If I knew from the beginning what the end would be, I wouldn't be that interested. So it's been very unexpected actually making the show from what I thought it would be, because it's just following these unknown paths. But that's also very exciting and satisfying.
And I really like that episode. It's the episode that we just heard. One of the things I like that hooked me about that episode is it satisfies both of my itches for being a radio nerd and a podcast nerd. Like you introduced me to this beautiful radio mystery somewhat, this Finnish radio station that I had never heard of. And so I'm wondering, I'm a little bit more curious about how in your childhood, how Latin came about, especially the I'm a bam, I'm a bis, I'm a bat, I'm a bomb, I'm a bam, I'm a what? Yeah. What is that?
You remember it. So that is the Latin verb to love. That I think is the imperfect tense. So I was loved, you were loved. We just had to recite everything by rote. I went to a very old fashioned school, so I learnt Latin from about the age of 8. It was so old fashioned that instead of a bell, you know, an electronic bell ringing in the classroom, each week one child was charged with getting this brass bell and walking around the whole school ringing it at the end of every lesson.
I wonder what that kid's doing now. Like,
well, that
like...
was that was me at one point. I remember the clapper fell off and I just had to bash it against the bell. So we all got a chance. And I really liked it. I didn't question it. I think it's because they got me young. I think it's so much easier to learn languages the younger you are. And it taught me everything about English, because I was not taught about the structure of English and the kind of mechanism that you feed words into so that you get some meaning out of them. I wasn't taught about English grammar, but I could infer it from how Latin worked, because Latin is quite a logical language. And also because when you're just taught that you have to recite all this stuff when you're 8, you don't necessarily rebel against it as much as if you were a bit older. But I don't know how much Latin is taught here now. I think it's probably a bit of a dying thing, and I can understand why it would not be considered essential. But it does make learning other languages a lot easier, I think. The thing about Latin is it does still work, and that is shown by the Latin news station and various other things that people do, like people who tweet in Latin and stuff. There are a huge number of people in the world already who would find it fairly easy to tap into it, I think. And English, I think, would be a nightmare to learn, because it's so idiomatic and there are so many words, and it's so irregular, and there's so many silent letters and all of that. Whereas Latin, I think it's much easier to get to grips with. So if you've got a language that has to be the language of the world because of technology, and currently that's English, maybe Latin would be better.
You're listening to KALW's The Spot. I'm talking with Helen Zaltzman, creator and host of the podcast The Illusionist and co-host of the podcast Answer Me This. How'd that sound? Is that correct? That's correct.
Very official. Yeah. Love it.
So moving away from Latin, just sorry, Latin.
Sorry. Ancient Greek time, Old Norse, whatever you like.
When I was thinking of questions to ask you in this interview, one really stood out, and that's looking at the word podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And you just seem like the perfect person to ask, is that a good word? Are we using that word correctly now? Is there a better word? Should there be more words to describe different podcasts or the podcast world at large?
People get really hung up on the word podcast. And personally, I don't care. I'm fine with it. I know it's not the most elegant word, but it does a valuable job for me. And a lot of people are like, no, podcasts are radio. For me, the fact that I'm outside radio is something I'm very proud of, because we had to make it work, just doing it ourselves, doing everything ourselves, really learning by doing. And there was a lot of hard work, and it did reap dividends. And now I'm able to do this full time. And I'm incredibly proud that I had to do that through this quite difficult and unpredictable path. So I want there to be a distinction between podcasts and radio, and the fact that anyone can do a podcast, and so you can get all these voices that you wouldn't get on radio, and they haven't been filtered by commissioners or just expectation of what you would get on a radio station or that particular radio station. And with all the talk of like the podcasting renaissance, I don't think there's been a renaissance. I think podcasting has been growing very steadily and strongly the whole time I've been doing it. There's certainly been a renaissance of journalists' interest in it. Mm-hmm. And the positive thing about this is that there's some really great shows that have started in the last few months, and there have been people writing about podcasts as well with the same kind of critical interest as they would about films or books, and I think that's really wonderful. I want there to be a separate designation. And as for the quality of the word itself, I mean, there are far worse words for lots of other things. One of the other options being bandied around by Ben Hammersley, the Guardian journalist who's credited with coining the word podcast when he was on a deadline, was, I think it was guerrilla audio, which I think would have been a lot more inconvenient and a lot more scrappy sounding.
We'd just be like, you know what? I'm going to get, I have this idea to launch this GA. This GA is just going to top the GA world.
Yeah, people are like, gah, what's that? Gah. Sounds great.
I would love to know your favorite podcasts.
Oh, I've been listening for a long time to a show called Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. This is really bound to cheer you up. She's a flight attendant. She seems really delightful and charming. She has a very infectious laugh, and she's telling stories about being a flight attendant and the passengers and the pilots, and her fellow flight attendants are chipping in with terrible things passengers have done. And it's just very cute, and it's been going for, I think, longer than I have. But otherwise, I'm just listening to new shows all the time, and I'm really excited by a lot of ones that have come up this year, like the Herd Network.
Yeah, they host some local podcasts. Actually, it looks like our time is running short, so I want to thank you so much, Helen, for your suggestions and also for joining us on The Spot today.
Oh, it's been my absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me on The Spot.
You can find info about Helen's podcasts, The Illusionist and Answer Me This, at her website, helenzaltzman.com. I'll also have a link to her site on kalw.org under the spot. Helen recommended a podcast that I hadn't heard of, Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. So, of course, I immediately downloaded a bunch of episodes and spent the weekend listening through them. My verdict? It's a delightful show that makes it easy to laugh about a subject that usually makes me very nervous. Flying. Betty is a flight attendant with a major airline, and her podcast features dozens of short stories from her experiences and from other flight crew members from across the world. Just for you, I've mixed together some highlights from the show that I think you might enjoy. Here's Betty.
I was talking to a new pilot the other day, and he was saying how irritated they get with us flight attendants, because on most of the planes, there's only a few planes that we have, we can control the temperature. Most of the time, we have to call the pilots, and there's so many of us, and different ones of us are calling it, saying it's hot, saying it's cold, and you have flight attendants who are going through menopause, who are always hot, so they want to cool it off. The passengers are always cold, so, you know, they get a lot of phone calls, and I guess it's, you know, a little irritating. Anyway, he was saying that a senior pilot had told him that he had bought this fake thermostat, or just bought a thermostat, but it's not attached to anything, and he had put like sticky tape on it. So whenever he got on the plane, he'd stick up this thermostat and say to the flight attendants, "Oh, we got this new thing. You can control the temperature yourself with that over there." And all the flight attendants are like, "Oh, great!" And then he wouldn't get any calls.
Okay, so anyway, I was taking a break, and we used to be able to take breaks in first class on the DC-10. It was very nice. They had nice, lay-flat seats. I was on second break, and I guess somebody forgot to wake me up, or I didn't get woken up. And so anyway, I shot out of the seat, and there was a tray of hot towels ready to get passed out, and I go to pass out the first hot towel. Well, the first two little Japanese ladies that look at me, they're giving me the funniest look. Well, when I look down, my pants are open and you can see my underwear because I ran to get the hot towel. I was in a hurry, so I forgot to get myself dressed. So I was half naked as I was passing out my first hot towels, and these Japanese ladies were looking at me like I was crazy. So I got out of there as quickly as possible and went and got dressed and, you know, finished the job. So.
We're boarding.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I see this cat.
Oh.
Running on a 7-6. The aisle. Down the aisle. Meow! On the way down. Oh my god. Did I see you right? 2 seconds later. Lady, bare feet. Bare feet.
Oh, bare feet.
Yes. Did you see my cat? That way.
Well, at least you didn't have to catch it.
I didn't have to catch it. The cat went into the trash chute of the 767.
Oh, and in the big one.
In the big one. Is coming
faster than the day before. This next story is slightly different, so I thought I'd give it a little introduction. I get to go to Paris every so often on layovers, and we switched hotels, and our hotel now is pretty close to the catacombs under the city of Paris. And the catacombs is something I've always meant to do, and since I was pretty close to it, I thought, okay, what the heck, stood in line in the rain, met some nice people in line, and then I recorded this little segment in the catacombs. I am walking through the catacombs underneath the city of Paris, France. It's interesting. A decree of the King's State Council on the 9th of November, 1785, ordered the transfer of all bones from the Cemetery of the Innocents, which had been closed down to health risks, and the bones were duly moved into the tunnels of the ancient and now abandoned underground quarries. So there's 6 million people's bones in the catacombs. That's the same amount of people in all of Los Angeles. All of their bones are in the catacombs. Makes you feel rather insignificant when you see millions of people's bones, basically just built into the walls. Millions of people's bones. It's weird. You can almost get a little cavalier after seeing the first few thousand people's bones. You see more bones and more bones. You would think that you'd be able to feel some sort of energy in here, you know, like having this many people's remains in one place. There is something almost lovely about it, considering they're all together.
So this old lady asks for assistance to use the restroom. So Denise takes her to the restroom, and the old lady says, "Well, I need you to help me. Like, can you pull down my pants?" And Denise says, "Well, sure." So Denise is pulling down her pants, looking away the whole time. So the lady does her business. She's, you know, trying to stand up, and she says, "Okay, now I need you to help me pull up my pants and tuck my shirt in." And so Denise says, "Okay." So she's looking the other way, trying to like pull up her underwear and her pants, and she's tucking in her shirt and everything. And then the lady's kind of hunched over, and Denise says, "Okay, are you ready?" She goes, "Well, I think so." And Denise says, "Well, can you stand up and walk?" And she says, "Well, no, honey, because you've tucked my boobs into my pants."
One day, there was a DC-9 crew with a captain who'd been around for a little while and a first officer. And the captain says, "Why don't we just play a trick on the flight attendants today?" Well, the DC-9, you must know, has a hatch in the cockpit through which one can go down onto the ramp. So the captain goes down into his hatch, which is down into an electronics bay, and he hides. Here comes the gate agent with the flight attendant to shut the door and ask if it's okay to push back. The first officer says, "Well, the gate agent notices that the captain's not there, and he says, "Well, where's the captain?" The first officer replies, "That's so-and-so. He's never on time. I am so tired of him not being on time. Just shut the door and let's go. I don't care if we leave him." Well, the gate agent didn't know what to do. The flight attendants were incredulous, but they said, okay. They shut the door, pulled off the jetway, and pushed back. As soon as they begin pushing back and the cockpit door is closed, the captain crawls out of the electronics bay, comes up, sits in the seat. Off they fly to Chattanooga. They land in Chattanooga, and as soon as they park, the captain jumps down into the electronics bay, out onto the ramp, runs over to the jetway, runs up the stairs, and before the door of the airplane is even open, he's banging on the side, yelling, "Don't you ever leave me again!"
Well, that's about it for this episode of Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. I hope you'll join me again next time so we can travel around the world together. Thanks. Bye.
You can find past episodes and learn how to subscribe to the podcast Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase at the show's website, bettyinthesky.net. That's it for today's episode of The Spot. You can find this episode and more at kalw.org. And tell me what you want to hear on The Spot. If you have a suggestion for a podcast we should feature, please drop me a line at thespot@kalw.org. Tune in next Thursday, same time, for another episode of The Spot, only on KALW San Francisco.